Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Product Uncensored Show. It is a welcome back, indeed. It has been a few months since my last episode. That was episode with Nat for Wreck-It. And I've been on a break since 2024 started until now. So I hope everyone has been doing great, and let's get to it, right? So by the way, if I've been away for too long, my name is Colin Pell. And I'm the host and creator of this show. And today is episode 43. We have got a very interesting episode today. We are going to be talking about mental health startups, right? As many of you know, digital health and employer assistant programs or EAP startups, they exploded during COVID as a way for humans to cope. In fact, in 2021, it was estimated that $5.5 billion in funding for mental health startups were distributed in that year. And this was actually more than double, 139% increased, in fact, from 2020. And a lot of this funding was mainly in the US. This data is taken from cbinsight.com in case you want to fact check me. So because most of this funding happened in the US, I was actually keen to find a mental health tech startup in the Southeast Asia region. And then I stumbled across Intellect, right? Intellect is a mental health institute, based in Singapore, founded in 2019, and they focus on the APAC market. They actually secured the Series A funding round in 2022. I believe it was to the tune of USD 20 million, according to CNN, which actually was the highest funding round for a health tech startup in Asia. So now this startup serves more than 3 million users across the Asia Pacific region, in 15 languages since it began in 2019. So having said all of that, right, who would be better to talk to me about mental health startups than Pratik Roy Chowdhury, the VP of product at Intellect, right? Pratik is a three-time founder, one of which got acquired, has product experience working in India and Indonesia and Singapore, working for startup giants such as Ola and Grab prior to joining Intellect. So that was a really long introduction. I would now like to welcome to the show Pratik. Hi, Pratik.
Hey, Colin. Thanks for having me. Thanks for that introduction as well. You've covered most of the bases, I guess.
All right. That's great. Let me just shift you into the spotlight first. Yes. So, Pratik, I hope you are doing well. Once again, thank you so much for agreeing to come on the show and talk about not just your company and what you do, but also to talk a little bit more about yourself. So let's start that way. Let's find out a little bit more about who Pratik is. So let's start with your 30-minute elevator pitch of who Pratik Roy Chowdhury is.
Thanks. Done this a few times now, but like you covered, I started off my career like straight out of the bat after college. Did a couple of startups. We successfully failed at it. Of course, we didn't get to the heights that we wanted to, but there was a good learning experience. And from there, I discovered my true calling, which is building products, getting them into the market, getting them to scale, and seeing the impact of, you know, everything that you build. Like you adhered to before, after my couple of startups, I worked at Ola, which is a ride-hailing giant in India. After that, moved to Indonesia to work at an omni-channel furniture company because I got really fascinated by warehousing and logistics in an island nation. You know, has its own challenges, never worked on it before. It was a really good experience. After that, moved to Grab. A completely different scale of problems. Worked on driver experience there, worked on consumer experience there, on the consumer app, specifically focused on growth and engagement around 3.5 years there before I came here to Intellect. And I think the the beauty of intellect is it's something that, you know, people say this a lot, and I always thought was usually lip service, but it's a place where I actually believe in the mission while building the product that I'm building. So I think, yeah, mental health is something that's super important now, needs to be talked about, needs to be destigmatized, needs to be made, you know, needs to be normalized as a matter of conversation. And yeah, I hope with intellect, we are able to do that.
Okay, thank you so much, Pratik. That was a great introduction. So actually, there were a couple of questions that I kind of wanted to sort of jump into a little bit. First question that I wanted to ask you was, your journey was interesting because the usual location move is India straight to Singapore, but you did India to Indonesia and then to Singapore. So I guess the first question is, what made you want to, you know, do product management in a different country? Because I think before that you were doing product management in Ola, which is already considered quite the giant in India, right?
Yeah. It's actually, I think, got to do with my background, where I started off by founding a couple of companies. So I've always been in a place where problems and the scale of what you're trying to do is what, you know, attracts me a lot. So back when I was when I did my first startup, story time, right? In 2011, my co-founder and I, we wanted to come up with an app where you could create up to 10 seconds of videos on the fly, put filters on it, and then share it with the world. So, but in 2011, India didn't have smartphones or 3G internet. 3G was a thing, by the way, for the kids listening today, before 5G. So 3G was a thing. 3G hadn't come to India yet. So we had issues, you know, starting up, because who's going to upload a video? We figured out a way of uploading audio without losing too much quality. And that's what we pivoted into. So essentially, we built Crokit, which was any user could create up to 30 seconds of audio, play around with the tone and the pitch of the sound, and then put it on the internet. Still had problems in India because, you know, at that time, again, no 3G, not much penetration of Android or iOS. So that actually took us to South America, and we operated out of South America for almost a year before coming back to India. So
sorry to interrupt. So you were actually living out of South America for about a year.
Yeah.
Why South America?
So once we pivoted into audio from video, right? We always wanted to pivot back to video, by the way. And it's something that you learn as you grow up. It's just, we didn't pivot back to video fast enough. And, you know, Snapchat happened, Instagram stories happened. And
Vine happened as well, right?
Yeah, Vine happened. But before Vine and TikTok, there was Musical.ly and Dubsmash. So those happened. And we just didn't pivot back fast enough. Why South America? Because once we did audio, we wanted to find a market where there was internet penetration. The government wanted startups to come in and do something innovative. And we figured that because most of the internet is in English, and South America is mostly Spanish and Portuguese, well, in Brazil, at least, we felt there was a good market there that we could tap into, not just in entertainment, in edtech, in all different forms, right? Where we could make the internet more localized. That was the plan. So that's what got us there. The reason I bring it up is because it ties into why I went to Indonesia. Mm-hmm. Because that gave me like a first-hand experience of a developing country or a developing economy where there are a lot of opportunities, where there's so much to learn about how the culture of a country impacts the startups that operate there. and the strategies that startups that operate there take to grow, right? So when I was in Ola and this opportunity to go to Indonesia came up, actually I had an opportunity to move to booking.com then as well in Amsterdam. So I had an offer from there and an offer from this Series A startup in Indonesia that was trying to sell furniture. Decided to go to Jakarta because it was just a completely new market. And before I took the flight out to Jakarta, I had no idea of how I would solve the problem. And I think that's what took me there.
But why you had an offer? Because this is going to be another question I was going to ask you, right? You had an offer from Booking. And usually I was going to say that, you know, the journey location switch from like Southeast Asia is usually India to Singapore, but generally the more popular route is actually India to Europe or India to US. You had the opportunity to go to Europe with Booking. Why didn't you take that and instead, you know, decided to go with a Series A furniture company?
I think it's just, I feel really comfortable at startups. I like the hustle. I like the pace. I like the uncertainty. I like the complexity. And there's something that I tell to most people who join Intellect as well. Whenever you join a startup, there's a lot of fires everywhere around you. But you know, fire keeps you warm.
It could keep you warm. It could burn you alive, right? So...
Yeah, that's a different way of looking at it. But yeah, I mean, it's just something about solving problems that are more complex and the ability to break things faster that, you know, always was very attractive to me. So at that point, I just felt a gut, call it a gut decision.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I've had many guests on the show who also have, you know, those kinds of like, you know, just something that's telling me do this instead of that. And I'll be keen to sort of come back to this point about you and startups as well, because there are some interesting questions in my head swirling right now. But we shall put that aside now, because what I wanted to do was actually talk a little bit more about your journey, because you went to Grab. And then after Grab, you went to Intellect. What was the push factor for you to join Intellect from Grab? Because Grab at that time, I think you joined Intellect in 2022. I think at that time, you know, the COVID was kind of on a downward trend. You know, the borders were opening up. Was that one of the reasons why you decided to join Intellect, or what was it basically? I'll pose it as a question that
So I don't think it was a push, because I think Grab, by the way, all things considered, is a great place to work at. For anyone who's listening, if they want to break into product or, you know, join a company that's operating at scale but still has some semblance of a, you know, a hectic feel about it, I'd definitely recommend Grab. Now, I just think for Intellect, it was more of a pull, you know. Like I said, mental health is something that I always believed in. I've personally, before coming to Intellect, I have seen counselors, I have seen coaches, and I have been helped by it. So for me, it was, you know, when Intellect reached out, it was something that immediately interested me. That was one. I think mental health as an industry is here to stay. It's only going to grow, and it's important. So, you know, if I do move, the switch would not be just a temporary switch, but a long-term switch. Having said that, apart from the industry, there's always the factor of Intellect was Series A, and that, you know, that itch never goes away. So that was the second pull factor. And the third pull factor actually was spoke to the founders who are quite young, at least compared to me, who are quite young, but I think have really good heads on their shoulders. So I thought, you know, it would be the right decision. And I could see working with these people for a long time. So I'd say people, size of company, and industry. pull.
Okay. Not a pull. Okay. All right. So what I gather from this is it was definitely the itch to go back to a Series A startup, you know, sort of start over, be able to impact there. You spoke to the founders, you liked, you felt that you could work with them, right? Here's another question for you. And this is something that I get asked every now and then. And it's a question that I find a little bit difficult to answer. So maybe, you know, asking you would be a better way, right? Because one of the things about joining smaller startups or, you know, those who are either Series A or pre-Series A seed funding is that you're going to be dealing very, very closely with the founder or founders.
Yeah.
How do you find founders who, or how do you know that, you know, that is a good founder? What's the criteria for evaluation for you?
Okay, so that's a really nuanced question, right? Number one, having been a founder myself, I understand more or less where someone who is in that position where they're coming from. It's your baby, right? You've built it up to where it is today because you had a dream, you had a vision, and you built something out of nothing. Right, which has gotten to a point where you are now hiring someone only because you don't have the time to do that job. Right.
Yeah.
So that context, I think, is super important. Now, within that context, it's a matter of figuring out, and this I'm going to say just as a product person, right? As a product person, what I want to see is how my interactions are with the founders in a way where am I going into a place that's going to be sales-led, CEO-led, product-led, or tech-led? All four have their own nuances, and it's a really personal opinion on which type of company you want to go to. And I think that is what I don't think there's a one-size-fits-all answer to it. So it's a, you know, you've got to know what you want to do and what type of company you want to be at, and then see if the founder is the right fit for you.
Yeah. So in the case of you joining Intellect, you know, what was the consideration that you were going to be joining what you felt was a product-led organization, and that, you know, you were able to sort of manage the relationship well with the founders? Was that it?
More or less. With mental health, right, the nuance of the industry is that while the company 0 to 1 and the product is 0 to 1, our industry is also 0 to 1, right?
Yeah.
Which means if you decide to be product-led completely, or you decide to be business-led completely, it's not something you want to put all your chips on at this stage. You want to have a certain level of flexibility where you're both proactive to address the needs that the market might have and reactive to address the needs that the market does have, right? So for Intellect, I think we had a discussion where I felt we'd have a good flexibility between how our vision can shape the market and the product while also having, you know, your feet on the ground, ears to the street, knowing what people will pay for, people are ready to buy today, and the problems that people are trying to solve today. So I think we have a good mix of product and business shaping where we want to go.
Yeah. Okay. So another question that comes up when we're talking about, you know, trying to build something, build a product in what you mentioned, I think, quite well as well. The industry itself is going 0 to 1. It's not just the startup scene, right? Yeah. Or your product itself.
Yeah.
Inevitably, you will come, there is going to come, you know, a few days, usually not one, but a few of those kinds of days where, you know, there is that need to want to be more product driven, and then at the same time there is this need to close the sales, to do what the people paying the dollar is asking for. How do you deal with that at Intellect, especially at a, I think, at a VP of product level, right? Not just as just a product manager,
right? The answer to that, I think, I don't think of it as an intellect or a mental health answer. It's more of a road mapping strategy thing. So essentially, the reality is that when we do road mapping for a quarter or a half, you want to have a certain bandwidth allocated to doing the must do things, you know, that have to be done. But at the same time, you also need to have a certain percentage of your bandwidth allocated to building the platform or building the features or building towards the vision that you have as a, you know, that'll drive the company 10x. So it's more about road mapping there, I think. And of course, we can always get into, hey, is it 70% commercial, 30% product, or is it 50%, 50%, or is it 10%, 90%? But that's all. But I think the key part of any product management job is stakeholder management, right? So there's no right answer to the percentage, but there just has to be a balance.
Okay. So maybe, I guess, one thing would be good to sort of understand from your perspective at Intellect is what is your approach to handling these? Because you're saying it's actually a road mapping exercise question more than just, you know, a budding industry and a budding startup. What is your favorite method of trying to approach the road mapping exercise?
Okay. That's a great question, by the way. These questions make me a little apprehensive, because I'll give you the context. My journey to being a PM was through startups, right? So I don't really have methodologies that I go with, because what I've learned, I've just learned by building and failing and sometimes succeeding, right? Having said that, we do try to do with my team, we do try to do a high level strategic scoring, metric impact scoring, and tech t-shirt sizing to find, you know, just a high level score that can allow us to prioritize initiatives. But apart from that, I think it's a lot of what I like about Series A companies is at some point you've got to trust your gut. Right. Your data is not going to tell you everything. You've got to have the anecdotal evidence. You've got to do user research. You've got to speak to the people using you. You've got to be in sales calls. You've got to see RFPs that big companies put out, tenders they put out, to, you know, have a holistic view of what the market needs today. And that then feeds into the scoring that you do at an initiative level. So it's more of a collaborative exercise where we try to get our clinical teams involved, our commercial teams involved, with a view to ensure that at least our strategic scoring is correct, even if our metric and impact scoring might be a little off.
Yeah, I think, just to catch on to something that you said, right? One of the reasons why I do this, why I interview as diverse guests as possible, is because of exactly what you said, right? There are people who come from the big companies, you know, those who have learned every single major framework out there and they apply it. And then I've also interviewed those whose literal first experience with product was being a VP of product at a startup. So I think there is everything in between those as well. And I think that's what at least the listeners who have reached out to me, they're keen to hear, right? What is the real story on the ground? It's not just about, oh, I employ framework A, framework B, and all that. So, I mean, thank you for even though being apprehensive, you know, really sharing with, you know, what happens. But I wanted
Go ahead.
Yeah. No, go ahead. Go ahead.
I was saying, always happy to talk about this, because there's always, you know, there's with everything product, there's always a sort of a certain nuance that has to be brought to every conversation. Right, talk about product strategy, about execution, anything, right? So the nuance is important. So sometimes telling people, hey, I don't use XYZ framework doesn't mean that framework doesn't work. It's just that, you know, you've got to know the surroundings, know the people, know the market, and then figure out which framework would work. You know, there's that famous saying, right? culture eats strategy for breakfast.
Ah, yes, yes. I have a t-shirt on that, which I really like. So yeah, agree with you. Agree with you. So I guess then the question that comes up, sorry, I'm still lingering on this point because I think it's very interesting how you're approaching it is. So you were saying that, you know, sometimes the data isn't there and it's a collaboration, right? Yes. And of course, inevitably, there are things that you want to do as the VP of product. And then the commercial team, the head of the commercial team has something they want to do. And the founder also wants something that they want to do. So yeah. In the absence of data or something more solid, how do you come to a decision on what gets built? What comes next?
Sure. Of course. I mean, again, always top down. As a company, we have our vision. And it's very close to the product vision as well, obviously. So the idea there being, at any point in time when your North Star is clear, then when your initiatives come in, you know what you want to do. I'll give you an example on this, right? We are a mental health app, and I will die on this hill that I don't want people to come back every day.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
But having said that, I do want them to come to Intellect when they need it. And I do want them to get the right care at the right time. So for me, app visits is not a metric that I would prioritize. Right. So let's say you have an initiative, brilliant initiative. We should do it. We've talked about it. We've impact sized it. We know that it's going to improve engagement, right? On the flip side, there's another initiative, maybe not so sexy, right? Which is ensuring that the quality of care that we give becomes better, or it's just another safety net for a high-risk critical SOP case, right? If it were a simple apples to oranges or apples to apples comparison, which one should we do? We'll do the SOP that solves the high risk critical case. Because before being in the world to get engagement, we're in the world to ensure people's lives are saved. Right. Yep. So I think it comes down to that North Star. What do you want to do? And for us, it's very clear. It's just, or at least for me, it's very clear, and happy to discuss this at depth because I do this every day, which is hospital grade servicing. That's what I call it. And hospital grade delivery. These are the two things you want to do in every service that we provide.
Hospital grade servicing and hospital grade, what was the second one?
Delivery.
Delivery, hospital grade servicing and hospital grade delivery. That sounds awesome. Yeah. Is that the North Star for you?
That is the North Star for us as a company. I would say, of course, we do have transactional metrics that we want to hit as well. But we wouldn't call it North Stars.
Okay, perfect, perfect. So I just wanted to sort of do a little bit of a tangent point here because the other thing that I know that many product managers are always asking is, you know, oh, how do I come up with your North Star? And I always say that, you know, your North Star is not just a matter of a metric. But there is a guiding path. It's almost like Simon Sinek start with why. Like it's your why, your reason for existence, right? And so Pratik, when you mentioned that, you know, hospital grade delivery, you know, that resonated with me because it's tangible and intangible at the same time. It gives the reason for existence, but there's also a way to sort of measure it. So I thought that was brilliant. So thank you for that. So I'll have to move on. I mean, I could spend the whole session talking about this, but I think there are some interesting questions that I wanted to discuss as well, right? One of the questions which is still stuck in my head as well is you know, based on your journey within the product management scene, right? So you were at Ola, you were at that company in Indonesia, you were at Grab and then Intellect. All four of them, well, okay, perhaps except for Ola and Grab, they are actually all within different industries. And one of the thought processes for some people within the product scene is that you need to carve out a niche for yourself. So, for example, you know, if I'm in the logistics scene or if I'm in the furniture scene, I should stay there. I should, you know, build my depth within e-commerce or something like that. But your journey has been slightly different, right? You've sort of moved industry. For you, was it because, let me frame it as a question. Did you do that by design or was that by accident?
I'd say it was by design. My first startup was, like I said, it was B2C, completely B2C social media, right? Second one was sports media. I actually had a stint at the company that acquired Crokit, which was B2B telephony, cloud telephony. Then I moved to Ola. In Ola, I actually worked in a very different vertical. We worked in asset management instead of the actual ride hailing. I worked in asset management, like the entire asset management company, profitability, financing, invoicing, etc. Then warehousing and order management in Fabelio with furniture. And in Grab, I was in the consumer app where I did growth and engagement and here mental health. So I'd say it was more by design because I think it's the scale of the problem and the complexity of the problem that personally entices me to, you know, want to, you know, dive deep into it and try to solve it. But there is, I would not say that it's building your career in a niche is the wrong thing to do, because I definitely think that has a lot of value as far as building your career is concerned. For me personally, I think, very honestly, product management is not industry specific. If you break it down, there is a person who has a problem. You just try to scale that problem or scale the solution to that problem, right? The thing I keep telling all my PMs and all my designers and my entire org is, if we only had one user, whether it be in furniture, mental health, Grab, or wherever, right? You don't need a product to solve it, right? You can just do it on call or just talk to the person. If you have 10 users, maybe you have an Excel sheet to ensure nothing breaks. You have 100 or 1,000 users, maybe you need Google Sheets because there's two people collaborating, right? Product's job is to scale solutions and scale and remove user problems, right? So, from a first principles point of view, your approach is always the same. You figure out what's the problem, does it need to be scaled, what's the user struggling with, then go into solutioning. I think, that as long as you have those fundamentals straight, then jumping industries is more fun because it's just so many different ways of approaching the same problem.
Yep. Okay. So yeah, I mean, this is just to get, you know, again, real life feedback, because there are people in I won't even say there's just two camps, there are probably more than two. But the one that I hear is usually, you know, do you stay within a particular industry and build your niche, or do you sort of move around? Again, like Krotik said, it there is no right and wrong. There is no one size fits all. But I think, from Protic's perspective, it has worked well for him, and he did it by design, which I think is quite important as well. I think that's good advice for anyone listening, you know, like, hey, you know, I got this really good offer. It's a problem I really want to solve, but I don't know whether it's, you know, bad for my future. This is one data point which you can take, right?
Yeah, maybe to add to that is, if you're in bigger companies and you want to build your career in bigger companies, it does make sense to identify what you're good at, because let's be honest, not everyone has an eye for UI, right? For visuals. So if you have a good eye for visuals, maybe you are more suited and you can add more value than the average PM on a consumer app. Maybe someone's like super strong at just managing projects, right? Or super strong at understanding operations. That makes you really good at, you know, like logistics or warehousing or like supply chain. I think as one progresses in their career, once you identify what your superpower is, you can build on that niche, and that will serve you well. Of course, if you go into startups, you should have a more well-rounded set of weapons with you.
Yep. Agreed. So now, again, continuing from what you've just mentioned, right? At Intellect, where you are the VP of product, what are you usually looking for in PM candidates to join a mental health tech startup?
Right. Again, I think there are two things come. There's skill and then there's attitude, right? Skills, I think, can be taught, can be learned. Everyone starts somewhere. When I started, I had no clue what I was doing. My first PM job, by the way, I failed at miserably because I came from being a founder and I didn't have the concept that different people have different jobs, if that makes sense. Because I went in and someone said, no, that's for marketing to do. And I was like, why? Why am I not doing it? Right? That's for QA to do. I'm like, but why? Right? It took me a time to wrap my head around that. So everyone starts somewhere. You've got to build your skill. I think what's important for a Series A company is the attitude. If the attitude and the resilience and the will to learn is there, right? All good PMs that I've ever worked with or seen have like an insatiable curiosity and this need to, create stuff or solve stuff. As long as you have that itch and the resilience to not burn out at a Series A company, because let's be honest, startups need a lot of work. As long as that's there, I think everything else can be taught.
Okay, so does that mean that for you, let's play out a hypothetical scenario, right? So let's say you have two candidates. One is a candidate who on paper has shown, I've done, increased this by 10%, I've, value of the LTV has gone up and all of that. And you've got another candidate who doesn't have all of that, but has what you mentioned in terms of the extreme curiosity, the want to be involved and the drive to be. For you, which candidate would you go with?
So there's also a nuance here, right? If there is a more mature product that I need to hire for, which has a pressing need, might want to look for experience where they can jump in directly and, land on their feet. Having said that, otherwise, I think it's, again, depends on the scope you're hiring for, right? If it's a manageable scope where you can provide them the air cover where they can grow in the next 6 months, it's always fun to see people learn and grow, right? It's like a product in itself where you have a person who comes in with a lot of willingness to learn, a willingness to do stuff, and then you see them fulfilling the potential. I think that's also personally quite fulfilling.
Okay. So in your opinion, hiring for heart is what you would usually go for, unless, like you said,
at a Series A company.
At a Series A company, yeah.
If the candidate with the experience has the same heart, then that's a different discussion.
Okay. Fantastic. So I think, another good point to sort of point out right now is I like the way that, Prateek is sort of giving the context or the nuance to his answers as well. So you're not just saying, oh, this is a one size fits all answer, right? So he goes back to, oh, this is for Series A, right? So this is why I'm making this decision. And I think it's a great habit for all of us in product to learn, right? Whenever you're trying to explain why you're doing something, right? That the context is a huge part of that reason. So I just wanted to call that out.
That's very flattering.
No, I mean, it's the reason why I have you on the show, right? Not then why I have you at all. So yeah. Okay. Let's move on. So one of the things that has come up, you know, I started the show with giving some stats about mental health tech startups, the kind of funding that has gone into it. One of the things that I didn't mention, but it was also in the same article that I took it from, was that mental health funding has since sort of dipped, right? It's gone back to almost the pre-COVID days. And I guess question for you is, as the VP of product at a Series A company, how are you sort of trying to build for the future without sacrificing your future? You know, if you get what I'm trying to say.
Right. I think the answer there again has a macro lens to it, right? It's not that funding for mental health startups specifically has, slowed down. I think the markets, due to different geopolitical reasons and, you know, economic reasons, the markets have slowed down overall. What that means is it's just being more prudent about how you do your spends and how you do your financials, right? Thankfully, we, like you also mentioned earlier, we raised quite a substantial Series A. So it's funding is not a big, touch wood, not a big problem for us. We have a good enough runway, and over the last couple of years, I think we've been able to balance both revenue growth and product growth or service growth, however you want to put it, in a really good way. So from that point of view, I think we're in a very healthy position, not just as Intellect, but also within the industry itself as well.
Okay, so this is where I'm going to press a little bit more, right? So you're saying that you need to balance, you know, both the revenue and also the service growth. How does that translate into the planning? Does that mean that, you know, from your perspective, there is going to be a season where you're focusing on the growth of the user base, and there's another season where you're really focusing on revenue? Do you split this 50-50 down the middle? What's the process for you looking like?
It goes back to the road mapping, right? At a quarter level, you just, based on the fires that are there and the strategy that is there, you just decide how much you want to allocate to each. Just for context, like a couple of years ago, Intellect was primarily B2C, and we had our self-care library, which is actually quite, we published a couple of papers last year proving the efficacy of a couple of those content, very exciting stuff. But we were doing only self-care and a bit of coaching back then. In 2 years, we've pivoted into the B2B space as well. And now we're, like you said, you know, we're a complete mental health ecosystem. We've got self-care, our library, we've got coaching, we've got holistic coaching, which is fitness, finance, diet. We've got counseling, we've got psychology, we've got, we've opened 7 in-person clinics in Singapore now. We've got 7 helpline, which is an EAP. The traditional form of the EAP, and we've also got reference to psychiatry. We've been able to expand to most of APAC, APJ, and a little more as well. So I think, we've, just to double down on the revenue growth and the service growth, I think we've been able to manage that really well. Of course, best laid plans of men, you know what they say about it, right? So it's, you've got to continue revisiting it every month to ensure you're putting the right percentage at the right place. But it's always about maintaining the correct balance between commercial needs versus long-term strategy needs.
Yep. The saying that I usually go for that I really like is the Mike Tyson one, right? Everybody has a plan until they get punched in the face. I mean, that's the one that, you know, like, yeah, you always have this, you know, the best laid plans, and then suddenly, boof, you get this gut punch and you realize you have to change.
Yeah, that's the thing. So we've just got to be, like, nimble. It's love the Mike Tyson quote. Product at Series A is also, I feel, a lot like a boxing match. You know there's going to be 10 rounds. You have a strategy. You know what you're going to do in round 3. But there's another guy in the ring who's punching you. So, like, you do have a strategy, but you've still got to like roll with the punches, right?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. One last question around your role and also in Intellect as well, because as I understand it, Intellect is APAC focused. So you've got it in a few countries. As well, and I believe I saw a post quite recently that you guys have even ventured as far as the US as one of your clients. And one of the things that I'm always very curious to understand, especially now we're talking about mental health startups, is how do you handle the user base, because the needs are diverse, right? And this is something that quite a lot of people, even from places like, you know, the US, where it's a little bit more uniform in that sense, it makes it a bit easier to build. Whereas in APAC, it's so varied, right? You know, the scale, the scope is so big.
That's a great question. I wish I had a magic wand to, like, answer it. My vision for the app is, or for the website, our vision for Intellect is, you open Intellect, don't even have to click anything, just opens on the right care triaging that you needed.
AI, bro, that's the answer right there. AI.
Yeah. that's the vision. But to be more specific, you know, one of the things that we do pride ourselves on is we've got one of the bigger clinical research teams in-house in this region. Not just clinical research, clinical ops, and in-house clinicians as well, who help ensure we're doing the right thing. Coupled with that, from a product point of view, our key is to always ensure that whatever we do is science-backed and quantifiably, you know, can be measured. The outcome can be measured in a quantifiable way. So again, goes back to ensuring that hospital grade delivery and hospital grade servicing, right? Of course, we want to get there, but goes back to keeping those two North Stars, right? As long as we know we are putting the right SOPs in place, we are putting the right triaging in place, that is told to us by the professionals in-house, right? And at the same time, ensuring that we don't build anything that's not, you know, tested for efficacy, at least done a couple of studies on it, gone through with our clinical content teams. We don't put it out. So ensuring that we have the right services is step one. And the second is, we actually do 20 languages right now. So Intellect is localized completely in, you know, mostly all Asian languages and a few European languages as well, and a few Latin American languages, regional. So we pride ourselves on ensuring that we are localized, but at the same time, science-backed and outcome-driven.
Okay. I do have to comment, though, with 20 languages, the maintenance of, you know, like, if for example, right, if suddenly one day you decide to change a phrase in one part of the app or in one part of the site, Yeah, it's going to be quite the headache. And you know, given it's a Series A startup, changes are frequent, right? I'm sure that must be quite the challenge to maintain.
Yeah, but, you know, it's par for the course. we have to ensure we do the right thing by our users. So that's a small step.
Okay, fair enough. Sorry, I know I said one, that was the last question. Actually, there was something that, you know, because I was trying to, like, you know, do my own homework and read up about mental health apps. And one of the things that came up early of this year, I think the American Psychological Association and The Guardian both covered this as well, is, you know, with the explosion of mental health technology during COVID, what we're also seeing now are the problems that come with it as the industry grows up, you know, as the companies grow together with it. There has been more and more cases of ethical issues that have been coming up. So things like data privacy breaches, monetization ethics, you know, loopholes around the Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act. How do you think product at Intellect plays that role in order to ensure, you know, that it, in an indirect sense, you're also holding yourself to the Hippocratic Oath of do no harm, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, that, to answer that, it actually touches another thing that a lot of people in product, you know, glib over because it's not that sexy, which is legal and regulatory compliances.
Yes.
It's a product roadmap in itself. You've got to ensure, at least in the industry that we are in, you've got to ensure the data handling is secure. You've got to ensure that, you know, we follow regional regulations. Like, for example, China will need its own apps, its own servers. How do you handle data? How do you handle cross-border data transfer? It's very important for us, especially because now we are doubling down on the B2B space. When we go into these enterprises, to have the right certifications, to have the right legal clearances, to do the right InfoSec, VenSec practices, to ensure that, you know, we've got everything above board. So that's super important. And that's something that, you know, we've, again, goes back to our hospital grade servicing, right? That's our North Star. So we cannot run away from it. It's something that we like dive into wholeheartedly.
Nice. I love it. All right. I promised that I would move away from just, you know, talking fully and solely about product and Intellect. What I wanted to do was actually talk a little bit about your experience as a product person, right? One of the things that you mentioned at the start of this episode, which I said I wanted to come back to, you were saying that you actually, when you joined Intellect, it was a product that you could believe in. That's another question that I think product folks around the world, and I think more Southeast Asia than not, from my own experience anyway, is like, hey, you know, what happens if you're a product manager for a product you don't believe in? What's your take on that?
Yeah, change your team, man. okay, so here's the thing. So I mean, that was a very direct answer. But again, like I said, there's no answers, right? If it goes back to what I said about what's the reason for a product to exist, right? If it's like less than 100 transactions or 100 users, you don't need a product. You just need like a good enough ops guy to ensure things are working, right? Now, if you're a PM and you find yourself in a product you don't believe in, then the question is, does that product need to exist? Well, let's be honest, probably it does, right? Because you've got the job. So the question then becomes, do you not believe in the user problem that you're solving? Now, that's a more philosophical question, because there is definitely a user problem there. Maybe you've not found it, right? Go to the ground, speak to users, right? Do a diary study, follow them, do UAT. If you, as a PM in my career, at least I've never come across a user problem that I felt was, you know, that's not a user problem. It is a user problem, man. And our job is to solve people's problems. So yeah, that's my roundabout answer. I think maybe if you're in a product that you don't believe in, maybe it's the user problem that doesn't excite you. So either find the right user problem or change your team to a user problem that you believe in.
Yep. Okay. All right. Yeah. Then I guess the other question also that I wanted to sort of, you know, get your take is, again, you mentioned this earlier on in the show, was that, you know, the slowdown in funding has not only been for mental health tech startups, but startups in general and funding in general has really hit the brakes really hard, especially last year. I think what we saw across the startup and the funding scene was that it dried up quite substantially. In your opinion, as a product leader that is based in Singapore, you know, and you're familiar with the Southeast Asia region, what are your thoughts in terms of how has this impacted the product role? Does it change anything, or is this just an economic blip that will rectify itself in the future?
Okay, well, I don't think I know about the economic blip. I mean, who knows where the world's going to? Global geopolitics is quite, you know, beyond beyond my prediction as well. But I think, to be honest, it doesn't change product. What it changes business, right? It changes what you want to double down on and how you want to double down on it from a company first perspective. So I think at the leadership level of a company, as long as your, it's oft thrown around word strategy, as long as your strategy, but I've seen bad strategy in my time, like is, oh my God. But yeah, as long as your strategy is more or less correct, or more or less in the right direction, right? Then it's not that big of a change for your teams and for your orgs, because you're still solving the same problems. It's just how much do you focus on some of those things?
Okay, all right. Thank you so much. So the other thing that I also wanted to sort of get your take on is, given that you've worked in companies of varying sizes, right? So you've had like the hyper growth scaling Grab, you know, you've worked at Ola, which is kind of similar, and then you're also at a, you know, Series A at Intellect. To you, what are the big differences that product managers should be aware about when they're trying to build their career? Like, are there nuances that, you know, that they should be aware of, pitfalls?
That's a great question. I'm just trying to figure out what's the key thing that's changing everywhere. I think every company, again, culture. I think every company's culture is so different that you need to be a chameleon as a PM. Okay, two things that as a PM is, instead of saying what's different across all three, I'll say what are the two things that are same across all three, right? Number one, and this is a controversial hot take, but
go for it.
PM, if you're in a team where your product designer is amazing, your analyst is amazing, your engineering manager is amazing, your PMM is amazing, your business counterparts are amazing, the PM has no day-to-day job. Everyone else can do it. The PM can write strategy and vision, right?
Okay.
On the flip side of the spectrum, let's say everyone is incompetent. At that point, the PM has to be able to pull everyone along in the right direction. Of course, that these are two extremes, right? So there's always going to be a spectrum. In a Series A company, invariably you will be somewhere in the middle of that spectrum, where based on where culture and the existing team comes in, you've got to be very clear that there will be not the capability level of every person that you work with is very different. So as the PM, your job again becomes stakeholder management, storytelling, so that you can get everyone moving in the right direction, and again, leading without authority, essentially, right? Can you get everyone to trust in what you're saying and then work with you to go towards the end point? The difference in a bigger company becomes that you know, you have more help. The team's bigger. There are more people who are more capable, probably. Like, I'm just talking averages, right? So as a PM, sometimes you have it easier in a bigger company because there are other people who can help you at the level you need help, which allows you more time to learn and which allows you more time to hone your skills. At a smaller company, that time is less because you've got to find the time to learn, because most of the time you're trying to pull everyone along in the right direction and getting everyone to believe in you. So I think being more well-rounded and being able to pick up work and getting people along with you in a Series A company is very different to in a bigger company. In a bigger company, the alignment is at a leadership level, right? Where you've got to do a lot of documentation, leadership meetings, get people to say, okay, fine, I believe in this. In a smaller company, you've got to pull the working team along. So just differences there. But I think, again, as a PM, you've got to say it's all part of the spectrum, because you might be at a big team where you've got to pull more than your weight, right? Or you might be at a Series A company where you've just landed with the most amazing co-workers ever, leaving you to, you know, fight other fires. So it's more about being aware of what you're trying to do, the vision you have, and what you need to do to pull your team along. That's one. The second thing that's, I think, big company, small company, doesn't matter, industry doesn't matter, is, and this is something that one of my previous managers had once told me. It was, every user is, you know, every data point is a user. We sometimes say, you know, there's a 99% of people do everything in a second. There's just 1% who are not able to do it. That 1% is an actual user standing out in the street somewhere trying to get your app to work. Right? As a PM, you cannot ignore the guy or ignore that person. You've got to be aware of what that is, what the edge cases are, what are they trying to solve. Because if everyone only did the happy path, then, you know, the world would be an easier place to live in. As long as, I think, as a PM, these are the two things that I would tell everyone should be, you know, very aware of. There's a spectrum. You've got to pull people along, and every data point is a user, man. Don't ignore them.
Nice. Thank you so much for that. Okay, let me wrap up this session with one last question for you. And this is just regards to, again, you know, drawing from your experience, being in the region and in the role. What do you think the future holds for, you know, product managers within the region? As in, let me sort of try and qualify this to make it a bit more narrow, the question, right? What are the areas which you think product managers should be really focusing on in the next, you know, 1 year, 2 years? You know, what is going to be key competencies within their jobs that you think that's going to need them to upskill themselves?
Wow. That, by the way, that great question does not narrow it down at all.
I know.
Again, I think fundamentals remain the same. You've got to understand the user, right? If you don't understand the user, you don't understand the user's problems, we've already missed the boat there. Now, assuming you have understood this, right? With AI, with a lot of stuff that's happening, with all the advancements, none of this is going to replace a PM, but it's going to make PMs be able to do more. So maybe what 5 PMs do today can be done by 2 tomorrow. A lot of the documentation could be automated. A lot of the grunt work or the refining work, or, you know, the presentations, a lot of those things can become faster. What what you won't get helped in is prioritization. What do you prioritize? What you still need to know is, because you know the user problem, when you prioritize, you need to know what you're scoping and what you're de-scoping. Mm-hmm. AI is not going to tell you what to scope and de-scope. I mean, sure, it can.
You'll try.
It'll try. AI can tell you everything.
Exactly.
But yeah, I think as a PM, the fundamentals never change. The fundamental remains that you're here to solve a user's problem. As long as you understand the problem and you know how to prioritize, there's a place for you. There's always going to be a place for you. Because the PM, our job is to scale the business. Every business wants to scale. With AI, we can scale it faster. Or we can do things to scale it.
Fantastic. I love that. Well, unfortunately, we have come to the end of our session. Just listening to your answers, there are like five different ways I wanted to pull this, but we'd need another 3 hours. And maybe one day I'll do like a 3 hour long podcast and then we'll go there. But for now, I think those were all the questions that we can fit into this episode. Is there any final thing you want to say, or was there something important that you feel that the product community should hear or should do as a sort of a parting parting line?
No, I think we spoke about a lot. Like I think you touched upon interesting conversation, and I love doing product work. I can go on for hours. Like for me, it's just it's fun to talk about this stuff. Now the for any person aspiring to do product or even any type of business, know your market. There's a reason why the way Uber operates and the way Grab operates is different, because the way Uber operates is how it will work in the US. The way Grab operates wouldn't make it work in the US, and vice versa. Same for Southeast Asia. The way Tokopedia operates probably wouldn't work in India, but the way some Indian e-commerce operates probably won't work in Indonesia. So yeah, know your market, know your user, and we're always solving problems. Our job is to scale businesses. It's the most fun job out there.
Yep, I agree with you. Product is definitely the most fun job out there.
That's what I feel.
No, I think you're onto something there, right? And I do share a lot of that view as well, among how solving the problem is always something that it gives you an amazing feeling when you've managed to achieve something as well. So I think we share a lot of similarities there. Thank you so much, Protik, for coming on the show. Maybe perhaps one day we'll get you back for a follow-up session. We hope that this has been a good episode for the rest of you. One of the things that I wanted to also say in ending is that I hope you've enjoyed the subtle changes that I made to the format of the show. If you do know what I've changed, feel free to comment or let me know on social media. We actually have some really interesting guests that we've got lined up for the coming episode. So stay tuned. And I do apologize as well for the lighting. Something went awry today. I was just telling Protik before we started that, something wasn't really going right. So I do apologize that the lighting is a bit darker than usual. Everyone could see Protik well, so I don't think that really matters that much. So until the next episode, stay tuned and have a great week ahead. I will see you again next time.